From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Proposition 8 on your November 4th California ballot would put into the California Constitution a definition of marriage as being between one man and one woman. The polls show a recent shift in numbers that has put the once-headed-for-defeat proposition ahead. Massive ad campaigns on both sides and the controversial nature of the issue have made the battle over Prop 8 a major one. We'll hear from both sides in the hour ahead. Your calls and emails will be included next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. In May, the California State Supreme Court overturned Proposition 22, a state proposition banning gay marriage in California. Since same-sex marriage has become legal in the state, there have been at least 11,000 same-sex couples statewide who have exchanged marriage vows. Proposition 8 on the November 4th ballot would overturn the state Supreme Court ruling and put into the California State Constitution a definition of marriage as being a union between one man and one woman. A new poll following an ad campaign shows major support for Proposition 8. Before November 4th, both sides will have spent some $50 million. This forum hour, we take up the debate over Proposition 8, and joining us here in studio is Bill May, who is chairman of the Catholics for the Common Good. He is a proponent, of course, for Proposition 8. Morning to you.
Good to be with you, Michael.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Kate Kendall, who is executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights and a member of the executive committee of the No on 8 campaign. Welcome, Kate Kendall.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And as is generally our custom here, we start with the proponent. So, Bill May, I guess from the perspective of you and those who are advocating Prop 8, you're saying, well, that's more about definition than it is about, quote, lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. If this was about lifestyle, there wouldn't be any debate and any discussion right now. Really, what this is supporting marriage, the foundation of our society that provides a mother and a father for children. Back in the year 2000, as you mentioned, California voters passed Prop 22 that defined marriage between a man and a woman in California. And on May 15th of this year, by a majority of a single vote on the Supreme Court, the will of the people was thrown out. All Prop 8 does is restore that definition of marriage. Only marriage between a man and a woman is valid and recognized in California, and puts it in the Constitution out of the reach of the activist judges.
So you're saying, in effect, you want to go back to what I guess some 60% of the California population voted for, Prop 22.
Absolutely. That was the will of the people. We've been there. We've done that. And it was wrong for the judges to overturn the will of the voters.
Kate Kendall, what about the will of the voters?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think voters have a very important role to play in our democracy. But courts also have an enormously important role. And we now live in a state where everyone has this precious and fundamental right to marry the person that they love. Harms no one else, helps families, strengthens relationships, certainly provides greater legal security for children. And to now face a situation where we are voting on a proposition that would eliminate that fundamental right, where now all same-sex couples and other couples are treated equally under the law, is a very disturbing situation to have us in. And we simply believe, and we believe most Californians at the end of the day will be standing with us in voting no on Prop 8 and not be in favor of eliminating rights of an entire category of citizenry.
Well, in fact, the literature of your campaign against Prop 8 says this is unprecedented to, as you put it, eliminate rights in a constitutional amendment.
It's never happened before in this country that a right recognized and granted, a civil right, a fundamental right, has been eliminated by a vote of the people. And to put civil rights, to put fundamental rights, to put protections and dignity up to a vote is offensive to most people's principles of democracy. And I believe that on November 4th, we will see a majority of Californians sharing that view.
Bill May, how much of this, well, the campaign, for example, has made a lot out of Gavin Newsom. It's going to happen whether you like it or not, and certainly has seemed to stoke the campaign to a great extent. But there's also been a lot of talk about teaching about gay and lesbian marriages in schools, in public schools. And in fact, Mayor Newsom married two lesbians at City Hall, and there was a class that went there of students. Mayor Newsom said he didn't know anything about it. And one of the women who got married was a teacher, and her class showed up. And this has been used in the campaign as well. Do you really feel or fear that if gay and lesbian marriages continue, they're going to actually be a part of curriculum in schools?
Oh, absolutely. See, the big problem with this is what the Supreme Court did. There were two things that the court did. Number one is it severed the relationship of between mothers and fathers and children in terms of marriage. That there was no compelling interest, as the court said, in retaining marriage as an institution for men and women, mothers and fathers for children. The second thing, it created a protected class. A protected class is a class. This is for the purposes of marriage. Protective class is a class like race. In other words, it made it redefined marriage as a contract between adults for the benefit of adults, and it made it discriminatory to make a distinction between same-sex marriage and traditional marriage. 96% of the schools in California teach marriage to the students, and it would be discriminatory to make a distinction in that. Well, we think that's wrong because parents, this is something that parents should be talking to their kids about when their kids are ready. They're imposing something on all children and all parents, and imposing it in a way that makes it discriminatory to make a distinction. So when parents, when children come home from school and their parents try to teach them their faith or teach them the real meaning of marriage, which is important to their futures, then in the eyes of the children, their parents become discriminatory. This is, you know, that line by Gavin Newsom, whether you like it or not, is really so it really says what this is all about. They're forcing it. They're jamming it down our throats, something that we know is true, and I think everybody knows is not true. There is a difference between marriage between a man and a woman, you know, future mothers and fathers, and it's always been seen as the foundation of society, the gold standard for raising future generations.
Well, in Massachusetts, in fact, I guess this has been used by the Yes on 8 people, Bill May and company, Kate Kendall, that in Massachusetts they're actually having kids read books about king marrying king and princess marrying princess, this sort of thing. I mean, how much is this, as an undercurrent, really a part of the whole debate that it's going to be in, marriage is going to be taught in public schools as marriage between same sex?
Well, this is a complete red herring and an utter scare tactic. And we've seen it before with people going so far as to say if same-sex couples can marry, polygamy will be next, or people will be able to marry inanimate objects. I mean, this is the scare tactic of the day, and it is nothing more than that. California law is absolutely clear that when it comes to conversations about family, sexuality, or marriage, parents, or on any issue, whether it's sexual orientation or race or religion, if parents are uncomfortable with the school engaging in that kind of conversation with their children, they can opt out of that conversation. And in
that law is much stronger here than in Massachusetts.
Much stronger. It's not even to make an equivalent argument between California and what's happening in Massachusetts is a complete and utter distortion. And it's really important to understand, while I understand Gavin Newsom's statement plays to those who are in favor of Prop 8, Prop 8 will have absolutely no effect on the education code, will have absolutely no effect on the curriculum. The California Teachers Association, Delaine Easton, former superintendent of public instruction, current superintendent of public instruction, all say Prop 8 will not affect education curriculum. The voters are being lied to by the proponents of Prop 8, and I know that is a strong condemnation, but it has to be said, because not only are they talking about this kids issue, but they're saying that churches will lose their tax-exempt status if Prop 8 passes. An absolute bald-faced lie.
They're saying this in ads?
They're saying this in ads. It has never happened. It would never happen. No unwilling church will ever have to marry a same-sex couple if they do not wish to. And if any church were sued because they didn't, me and the National Center for Lesbian Rights would represent them. It is a lie. And people, voters need to understand what's really at stake here. What's really at stake, regardless of how you feel about marriage. And I grew up Mormon in Utah. I have lots of family living back in Utah who are devout Mormons. They perfectly embrace my family. But I know there are folks who don't share that view and who do have a different view or an uncomfortable view around the idea of same-sex couples marrying. That is not the issue here. The issue is, are we going to vote to eliminate a fundamental right for an entire category of citizens? That, I think, is a bridge too far, and it is not something voters will be willing to do.
Well, I want to get some response from Bill May, particularly to what you said about the lying of the ads, so to speak. But before I do, I wanted to ask you about religion and its role in this whole campaign. The Mormons have put up about half of the money for Prop 8, in support of Prop 8. These are presumably not the Mormons who are polygamous, because this is one man and one woman by definition. But how much really, in your judgment, is religion sort of involved or integral to this whole campaign? How do you see it?
Well, I mean, there is certainly no monolithic religious view on the issue of same-sex couples marrying, and there are a lot of religious leaders and congregations, hundreds of them, in fact, that support the right of same-sex couples to marry. I do think it is troubling, and this is the church of my childhood, and there are people in my life who I love dearly who are very devout Mormon. It is very troubling that the Mormon Church has exhorted their membership repeatedly to put money in to pass Prop 8, and that the Mormon Church accounts for about over 40% of the money that has been raised. You know, we always worry about politicians buying an election or buying a seat in Congress. In this case, it is almost all of the funding for Yes on Prop 8 is religiously based from very conservative religious congregations. And
a lot of Catholic money.
A lot of Catholic money, a lot of Mormon money, a lot of evangelical Christian money.
And a lot of small donors, too, we should say.
And absolutely. And what I will say is many of the Mormons who have given, I mean, some of them pulled out their life savings because they were told by the prophet of the Mormon Church to do so. And the only concern about that is not that religions are not entitled to have exactly the view they want and exhort their members to do this, but I think the voters need to be aware this is not a disagreement among people who have the same view of the Constitution and the same view of our democracy and the same view of fundamental rights. And no one religious view, and particularly a religious view that says it's okay to eliminate rights for a category of people, should be able to have access to amend the Constitution so easily.
Kate Kendall is Executive Director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, a member of the Executive Committee of the No on 8 campaign, and Bill May, again, is Chairman of Catholics for the Common Good. Well, how much of this is religiously based, Bill May?
Well, there's no doubt that that many people of faith are supporting this initiative, but there aren't the public interest is not based on any religious belief. This campaign is based on reason that anybody can understand, and people do understand that the relationship between a man and a woman in marriage is the foundation of the family, providing a mother and a father for children, is a unique relationship. In fact, it's a relationship that is protected by the UN Convention on the Rights of Children. And it was passed in 1989. But in California, the judges have severed that interest and have redefined marriage as just a contract between adults for the benefit of adults. Now, that's what the debate is all about.
Well, what about Ms. Kendall said about lies? I mean, this has certainly been
strong words.
Yeah, it is strong words.
Strong words, and you know, it's surprising that Kate, you would say that, because you're claiming lies about facts that are actually happening right now.
And well, I'd like to hear the fact that supports any church realistically being denied tax-exempt status if they refuse to
marry same-sex
couples.
We're talking about what you said is the red herring about kids being taught in schools and that people would be able to opt out. There is no opt-out for protected classes. People
that
cannot...
This is just not true. I mean, this is just not the law.
Are you denying that a protected class was set up by the Supreme Court?
No, I'm not denying that point.
That's the point.
But you're arguing a consequence. This is where people... You know, it's one thing to say that you disagree with the court's ruling or you disagree with the idea of same-sex couples having the same right to marry as anyone else. And it's entirely another thing to then extrapolate consequences that are not based in law. And even the judge who reviewed the ballot arguments on this issue of kids being taught about, quote, gay marriage, found that what the proponents of Prop 8 were saying was false and misleading. You don't have to believe me. Look at the ruling of the court when they looked at the ballot arguments. And the tax-exempt issue, an utter and absolute lie. I mean, really, this is not language I would normally use. I want to be respectful. I am respectful. Bill, I appreciate your view. But what has to be told is the truth of how the other side is presenting their argumentation.
Let me hear Bill make the case for his side. I mean, in terms of what you're saying, is this just consequence and not the letter of the law? And what about the judge's ruling?
Well, you know, the whole idea of a public policy debate is to talk about the goods and the consequences of proposed legislation, and that's what this is. And the court's ruling has consequences, severe consequences, and as they become better known by the public, it's very upsetting. Parents are very, very concerned about the way this is being imposed and shoved down their throat. Nobody wants to be legally discriminatory under the law and presented that way because they have a disagreement on what marriage really is.
You know, since we're talking about the ads, I must tell you, one of the more curious things that I've discovered is that on both sides, there are heterosexuals in the ads. I mean, whether it's the Yes campaign using Gavin Newsom or whatever, or the No campaign using couples who've been married 46 years who say, give, you know, our children the right that is due them and so forth. I just find this kind of curious. I mean, it's like everybody's trying to avoid the fact in some level that this, as far as the public and disseminating information that what we're talking about here is same-sex. What we're talking about here is same-sex couples.
Well, I think everyone understands that the central issue here is taking away the right of same-sex couples to marry. And certainly there's been, over the course of the summer, enormous and very poignant stories about couples marrying. Those couples who have married and who have told their stories have been one of the central reasons why I think we are going to see Prop 8 defeated. Those 11,000, and I think that is probably an underestimation of the number of same-sex couples who have gotten married, witnessed by family and friends, coworkers and neighbors who are all going to vote no because they have been able now to see these people that they love embraced by the law and accorded the same dignity and protection as anyone else.
Haven't you been shocked, though, by the surge of support for 8? I mean, particularly in light of what you just said and in light of the fact that the polls were running very much against 8 initially. Is it the ad campaign and the kind of falseness that you're saying is part of the ad campaign? Because one of the more peculiar things in all this is the younger voters. I mean, according to Zogby, who was on here recently, you know, younger voters are very free of any kind of prejudice and homophobia much more than other generations. Younger voters are supporting Proposition 8.
Yeah, what we've seen, and we knew this was going to happen all along, all those public polls that we saw earlier that showed that we were ahead by double digits, we never really believed that that was, in fact, the case. I think the opponents...
It's a kind of gay Bradley effect, maybe?
I think the gay Bradley effect to some degree where people weren't telling the truth or they hadn't really started to think about it that much. And once the other side's ads went up with these sort of distortions, it played on what people might be concerned about. And so what's important now and what our ads are trying to do now is tell people the actual truth and that no sky is going to fall, no parent is going to lose the ability to teach their children morality as they see it through their whatever religious lens they might apply. No church is going to lose its tax-exempt status. And no one has to feel like they must embrace the idea of same-sex couples marrying. What we must have people understand, though, is that we are facing a situation in this country for the first time ever where a fundamental right is now enjoyed by a category of people that a constitutional amendment would eliminate and take away. And there would be real harm and consequences because we are talking about loving couples, we are talking about families, we're talking about just the basic dignity and protection that they now enjoy.
Well, I'm looking, Bill May, at some of the ads here from the pro-AIDS side, talking about survival of the family as we know it and as God established it. That's a direct line from, I mean, God is being brought into this. I mean, in fact, I suppose from your side, one of the arguments is people of faith shouldn't have the tenets of their faith overturned by a court, especially by a one-vote judge. I mean, that hasn't really been brought into the argument, but it should be brought into the argument that, in other words, you have essentially same-sex marriage, which goes against what people believe.
No, God shouldn't be brought into the argument, but it is a fundamental right for people to be able to practice their faith and to educate their children in the way that they would like. And you know, already kids are being exposed to this in schools. It's a fact. It's a fact in Massachusetts, and it's even the California law is even more stringent because a protected class has been established, and people can't opt out of something that under the law is found to be discriminatory, and that is the distinction between same-sex marriage and marriage. Second thing, there is no fundamental right to marry. And that was something that was created by the Supreme Court. It's not an internationally recognized thing. It's a desire to have a right, but it's not a fundamental right at all. God should not play a role in this. This is a public policy thing, and certainly nobody is trying to impose a religious belief on anybody. But there has always been a public interest in promoting marriage between a men and women since it's common, not always, but common that when men and women have relationships that children result from that. And it has always been a public interest to encourage those people to marry and be accountable to their children and to each other. The court has severed that. That is the big concern on that. And eliminated that as a public interest. Now today, it's reached the point. The indifference towards marriage has reached the point that 4 out of 10 kids are born out of wedlock. That is a serious, serious problem. Secondly, 34% are living away from their fathers. And the Brookings Institute, liberal institution or think tank back in Washington, has established that the decline in marriage is directly responsible for the number of children living in poverty. Under this law,
because I want to give, I'll get you to finish your point when we come back. But I want to give out the phone number because I know there are going to be listeners who want to join us on this. And in fact, you're enjoined to do that right now and invited to participate in this discussion. Our toll free number, 866-733-6786. That's toll free from wherever you're listening to us. Or however, internet, Sirius satellite, or radio. Again, 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us, or you can join us by email, simply by emailing us at forum@kqed.org. Talking with Bill May, Chairman of Catholics for the Common Good, and Kate Kendall, who is a member of the Executive Committee of the No on 8 campaign, all about Proposition 8 on the California ballot. When we return, we'll hear from you. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about Proposition 8, which is on the California November 4th ballot. It would amend the state constitution to ban same-sex marriage. And talking to a supporter and an opponent, the supporter is Bill May, who chairs Catholics for the Common Good. And the opponent is Kate Kendall, who is executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights and a member of the executive committee of the No on 8 campaign. And we will be going to your calls and emails forthwith, but I wanted to extend the courtesy to Bill May of letting him finish his second point that you started before we went to the break. Bill May?
Well, I was talking about the imperative of promoting marriage for future mothers and fathers and the the fact that marriage has declined to such extent that 4 out of 10 kids are born out of wedlock, and the Brookings Institution indicates that the decline of marriage is responsible for the increased children living in poverty. Yet, with the decision of the California Supreme Court creating a protected class and disconnecting marriage from mothers and fathers and children, it would be discriminatory to specifically promote marriage for future mothers and fathers. And that's a big problem.
Of course, same-sex couples do have children.
Pardon me?
I say same-sex couples do have children,
Well, that's two different things. We're talking about a mother and father that has a special relationship with the children. They're the origin of the child, and people have a connection. They have a desire to know their mothers and fathers, and that's protected by the UN Charter on the Rights of Children. Or not the UN Charter, UN Convention on the Rights of Children. But the second thing is parenting, which is a separate thing. And anybody can parent. Siblings can parent, aunts, uncles, grandparents, homosexuals, single people. Anybody can parent, and anybody can be a good parent. And it's important for society to support parents in the role of parents. But that is different from marriage between a man and a woman and mothers and fathers. It's the foundation of society. Something that's been known as the gold standard, but now is considered discriminatory to promote as such.
Okay, Kendall, you wanted to respond.
Well, to the extent that marriage is in trouble, is certainly not to be laid at the fault of same-sex couples. Your parade of horribles bill has nothing to do with expanding the right of marriage to include same-sex couples. That only strengthens families and relationships and the children in those relationships. The fundamental right now that has been extended to same-sex couples to marry is not about severing the recognition of the importance of marriage to the stability of a family. It's about recognizing and expanding that to include same-sex couples who form relationships, who become economically interdependent, many of them who have children, who live in neighborhoods, who support their community, and who now finally in the state of California are supported and recognized as having their relationship afforded under civil law the same dignity, respect, and security as anyone else's.
Let me go to our callers, and we'll begin, Donnelly, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. My question actually was for Mr. May about teaching about this civil right of gays to marry in school. And I'm wondering how he differentiates that between the teaching of evolution in school, which people also and families have objections to on religious grounds.
Bill May?
Well, it's apples and oranges. We support marriage between a man and a woman for the benefit of children. That's always been the public interest of marriage, and still is, and we believe that children should be taught that this is a special relationship that affects how they view marriage in their future, nowadays less and less people are making a commitment to each other and disconnecting marriage from children, and that's a bad trend. It's bad for society. It's bad for children, and it's leading to structural poverty, and we need to be promoting marriage, between men and women, who are future mothers and fathers.
And there's nothing inconsistent in promoting marriage between heterosexual folks who wish to get married, and also expanding that right and protection for same-sex couples.
What do you say, Kate Kendall, to – I'm looking at an email here from a woman in the South Bay named Amy. She says, I don't think this is a civil rights issue. Civilly, homosexuals are not denied any rights, just the word marriage, and this isn't anything new. Societies have defined marriage as being between a man and a woman since the dawn of time. No matter what country you look at, in whatever year or whatever century, societies are organized and gathered together with a man or woman forming what is known as marriage. This isn't just modern 21st century America. It's a core fundamental truth of society. Humanity originates from a man and a woman being joined together in marriage. And then she goes on to say, this country was founded upon principles of religious freedom. Treating someone's religious beliefs so lightly does not bode well for our future. The time may soon come when judges decide that churches cannot perform legal marriages unless they also conduct homosexual marriages.
Well, I'll take the first point, the last point first. Again, that there's nothing to bear out, that slippery slope, parade of horribles, dark tragedy happening simply because we've expanded the civil rights recognition for same-sex couples. And I would disagree around the civil rights issue. For people who can marry, if we were to remove that right, and it has been denied couples in the past based on race, women were considered chattel and property in marriage before. Marriage has undergone many evolutional changes in order to expand and make it a more protective institution for the people involved. And the fundamental right to marry has been recognized by courts as a fundamental right. To be able to marry the person you love is at the core of what it means to express yourself in a human commitment with another person. And to have only lesbian and gay couples, same-sex couples, denied the actual use of the word and that cultural institution called marriage based solely on their sexual orientation is a fundamental denial of a civil right. And thankfully, we now live in a state where that civil right has been extended. Same-sex couples can marry, and Prop 8 is about eliminating that profound and poignant ability to be able to say you are married to the person you love.
Let me take that point about a fundamental right that you've mentioned a couple of times here this morning, Kate Kendall, and go to Bill May and a listener from up in Mendocino County who says, certainly when the Supreme Court imposed racial equality and sanctioned interracial marriage, there was widespread dissent among major populations in the United States. However, thanks to the wisdom of our judicial branch, the beacon of equality and justice is alive and well in our nation. Passage of Prop 8 would be a major step backwards toward the disparity which fuels hatred and inequality. Now, we're talking about consequences. Here's a listener who says, take away this right and you're fueling hatred and inequality.
I'm so glad that that listener raised that point, equating this to the ban on interracial marriage. That is an area where the Supreme Court really blew it, and they used that to justify what they were doing. And
the state Supreme Court,
yeah. And they didn't go back and look at their history books on this. The whole ban, the whole movement to ban interracial marriage was based on a racist view of racial purity. There was a one drop theory that if there was one drop of African American blood, a person was black. There were people that would claim that through interracial marriage, it would be the end of the white race. Just ridiculous stuff now. But indeed, those bans on interracial marriage weren't about keeping two people of different races apart. It was about mothers and fathers and children. And that's what marriage is still about today. So this is an ignoring history and distortion of history, and actually it compounds arrogance with ignorance on the Supreme Court.
What about the point about a fundamental right? That marriage should be a fundamental right of individuals, and in impeding it, you're really stoking hate and inequality.
Well, there's no such thing as a fundamental right of marriage for same-sex couples. That's an invention. It's a desire. And really, you know, we need to look at public interest in marriage and what it's all about. It's internationally recognized as the foundation of the family, the gold standard, and should be promoted in society for the public interest. Really, the debate here is, should marriage be have a public interest for the benefit of children in connecting them with their mothers and fathers? Or is it simply a contract for the benefit of adults? And that's where the disagreement really is. This isn't about the desires of adults. This is about a public interest, and it's about the rights of children, which are being ignored.
All right. I don't want to ignore our callers. There are a lot of people who want to lend their voice to this discussion and this debate. Linda, good morning.
Hi. Wow, I have so many things to say, but actually, to touch upon Bill May's most recent point of racial purity, I think that it's so ironic. I think he's disproving his point, and I think that really they're talking about heterosexual purity here, that heterosexuals are the only ones that can raise a loving family, and he continues to point that out. And I live in San Francisco, and I see so many same-sex loving families that really just reinforce the sanctity and the power of marriage that should be enjoyed by same-sex couples, whether or not children are involved. But the fact that, you know, children are living in poverty, and he keeps pointing to children, and there are so many same-sex couples that whether or not he's comfortable with it, he's going to have to get used to the fact that same-sex couples are raising children, will continue to do so, and really it's beneficial for children.
Linda, I want to actually read an email from another listener, Nancy, that dovetails here. She's from Castro Valley and says, as a mother of two young boys, I completely disagree with the way Prop 8 proponents use the rights of children as part of their argument. I cannot think of a better message to send to my children than one of inclusion, that couples, no matter if they're heterosexual or homosexual, have the same rights to make a lifetime commitment to each other and love one another. I think the alternative, one in which children learn that certain people are excluded from making a loving commitment to one another in the form of marriage simply because they're outside the norm, is frightening and will teach them that closed-mindedness and intolerance are okay. This is definitely not my idea of a good way to raise our children with moral values of acceptance. I can't kind of state your position, Kate Kendall.
Yeah, it absolutely states our position. And I do think it's really enormously important. While there may be certain family structures that individuals based on religious belief or the way they were raised only want to support, or their opinion is that those are the only sort of family structures that should be embraced, the law and the Constitution in the state of California says that every adult person has a fundamental right to marry the person that they love, that equality, principles of equality should be extended to all, and to now be facing a proposition where we would be eliminating that right, where we would be eliminating the most fundamental protections that protect the couple, protect their family, protect the security of the larger society. I would be the first person, and in fact, in our briefs in the case, we and those who wanted to have the court rule otherwise, we were both on the same page, understanding and underscoring the importance of marriage, that people do see this as a unique and important institution for a couple coming together and for supporting society. To the extent that marriage has been in a free fall, that fewer people get married when we think that would be better for them to do, expanding that to include same-sex couples and to have them have the same fundamental dignity to be able to be a part of their neighborhoods and their communities in the same way as anyone else is really the highest aspiration of our Constitution.
Let me bring in more calls. This is a caller joining us from Los Angeles. Samantha, good morning. You're on Forum.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment on the talk about consequences, and I'm already seeing here in California, without bringing Massachusetts into the conversation, very real consequences about, redefining marriage. The other day I read about a group of first graders that was taken to witness a lesbian wedding. As a parent of a 10-year-old, I think I should be allowed to teach my daughter, when I feel it's appropriate, what marriage is. It shouldn't be imposed in the public school system, especially 5-6-year-olds when they're so impressionable. Just a couple of days ago, I read about someone that was working on the Yes on 8 campaign who was attacked just for stating what he believes. Don't tell me there aren't consequences or that we shouldn't talk about the consequences, because there are real consequences and we are witnessing them. And as a parent, I am going to do what I need to do to protect my parental rights. And I don't feel that we are, by voting yes on 8, we're taking away from any of, you know, rights from any homosexual couples. I think that they already have the rights to have a relationship, and that's legally recognized as a domestic partnership. I don't think that we should take away parental rights and redefine marriage just to suit, you know.
Samantha, you're not reassured by what you heard Kate Kendall say about California laws protecting you in the sense that you were describing here?
Not at all. I just feel that she's going to say what she needs to say to further her agenda, and the reality and the facts are they're out there. You know, all you have to do is look for them. We talked about Massachusetts. I'm telling you, very real consequences here in California that we're already seeing and witnessing. It's not made up stuff. It's not, you know, things that we're, you know, using as fear tactics or anything else. It's just facts, and there are consequences to not passing Prop 8, and people will see it, and I just think as a parent, I will work and do what I need to do to protect my parental rights. And I am not about to give up those rights just so that people can redefine marriage.
Well, Samantha, let me thank you. And Kay, can you understand the kind of fear that and concern that this
I completely hear what Samantha is saying, and I respect what she is saying about wanting to raise her daughter the way she wishes. And, you know, Samantha, I don't know what to say to you other than look to what the law says and look to what educational experts are saying. There is nothing about Prop 8 that will interfere with your right to raise your daughter exactly as you wish. And with regard to this field trip, there were parents who opted out. This shows perfectly that California law works when it comes to parents being able to raise their children and to teach morality the way they wish. That is actually embedded in the California education code.
I think there may be a fear underlying this, though, that when we're talking about consequences, you're talking about the law. The law has changed with respect to same-sex marriage, and the law could change with respect to the schools, as we saw in Massachusetts. I think that's what I'm hearing from some of these people who are expressing their apprehensions. That, in other words, you're on a trajectory here, and that's where the trajectory will ultimately go toward, you know, Bill May.
Yeah, Kate, that's totally disingenuous to say there's an example of parents being able to opt out. Under California law, parental permission is required for field trips, but there was no opting out for the discussion that took place in the classroom before and after the trip. And that's just totally disingenuous to try to mislead California voters to say this is an example of parents opting out. There is no opt-out. There's no opt-out from discussions of racial equality and things of that sort, and there shouldn't be.
Well,
and what the objection that California parents and have is the fact that this is being forced as a belief that people must hold, and to not hold it is discriminatory, and that is wrong. Now, the caller raised another point that was really important, and that is the fact that no rights and benefits will be taken away from same-sex couples when this when Proposition 8 passes.
Forgive me if I'm wrong. In fact, originally when Prop 8 was written, it was going to include domestic partners, but it was decided that that would be foolish and that would be not in the best interest of the campaign. Am I correct?
Never.
Never even considered?
Never considered unless there was another group that was proposing something like that, but that was never considered. This was always to...
You're sacrosanct where domestic partners are concerned. I mean, that is off bounds.
That's the law in California, and number one. Number two, domestic partners in California have all the rights and benefits of marriage, much to the grin of same-sex couples, because it's just as hard to get out of a domestic partnership as it is out of a marriage, and it's just as costly. But this is not taking away any rights or benefits from anyone. This is just establishing that marriage between a man and a woman and future mothers and fathers and is different. It's different. And we all know that in our heart. We all have that desire to know our mother and father. We have that desire to have our mother and fathers together. And that is different. And responding to an earlier caller, I have never said anything about against same-sex couples parenting or anybody parenting. There are good parents and there are bad parents, and it's not it has nothing to do with sexual orientation or anything else. But this is something that is unique for society, and everybody in their heart has that desire,
you know, Bill,
connect with their mother and father and to have married mothers and fathers.
This is the thing that's fine. People who want to connect with their mother and father are not going to be stopped from connecting with their mother and father. Marriage for heterosexual people will not be affected by the right of same-sex couples to marry. And I want the specter of harm that people fear from some future demon really must be understood in the context of what the law is in California now. If people are allowed to get away with some parade of horribles of what might happen in the future rather than the reality of what is happening now.
But the law changes. I mean, there's a slippery slope in people's minds, like with Prop 22. The law has changed because of the Supreme Court, right?
Yes, the law. I mean, clearly, the law in California has changed to now expand this.
So
right,
I think what I'm hearing from
couples,
those people who are apprehensive about this, is that the law could change again. It could make it even more protective toward, let's say, children having the rights like they do in Massachusetts.
And if, in fact, but that is not tied to the passage of Prop 8. The law could change in terms of on a range of issues dealing with sexual orientation and same-sex relationships that has nothing to do with the passage of Prop 8. Parents will all, under California law, parents retain the right and have the right to teach morality, the kind of morality, the whatever religious view they wish, and they are completely free to do that and will not be affected in that kind of teaching by anything to do with Prop 8. And the only final point to make around this domestic partnership issue is that it is not true that same-sex couples enjoy all of the same rights and benefits and protections under domestic partnership they do under marriage. There are some significant differences in terms of the entry and exit of the relationship, but the most important difference is really the dignitary difference. To have your relationship, have it be called something else, to have it be something that is not recognized universally, is not understood universally, there is no common vocabulary to it, it is not recognized by many other states, it is not recognized, your family doesn't even know what you're talking about half the time when it's domestic partnership. Everyone understands marriage, and there's no reason for same-sex couples to not enjoy that same protection.
I need to tell listeners, for the sake of understanding, that the vast majority of our calls and emails are arguing against, but we're trying to get a range of views here and, you know, orchestrate them in such a way that we get a range of views. Just a quick question, though, Kate Kendall, because we're getting a lot of emails asking, and you're the lawyer here, I believe, so maybe you can – Bill, you're not a lawyer, right? I didn't mean to necessarily impugn anything. I just want to get
really
that for the
record. I'm really at a disadvantage here, I think.
Well, no, but there's a question that a lot of people are raising, that is – many people are getting married before November 4th, or you know, getting same-sex unions before
yes.
November 4th. Now, will those become invalid if Proposition 8 passes?
It is our position that anyone married before November 4th will be legally married.
Your position, but the Attorney General, I think Jerry Brown said he's not sure. He thinks that everything
It would truly be a violation of the most fundamental protections to have an amendment have retroactive effect. That is an argument that I think would be very easily defeated if the amendment were seen to be applied retroactively and to annul or invalidate the marriages of the couples who got married. Obviously, if Prop 8 were to pass, there would be devastating consequences for same-sex couples and their families and people who care about them. Clearly, that might be a subject of future legal litigation. But our best advice at this point in this unprecedented landscape is that people who are married before November 4th will continue to be married even if Prop 8 were to pass.
Bill May, I want to get back to just the question of religion here because, again, a lot of emails are saying, well, you know, it's mainly religious folk and people of faith who are promoting and behind Proposition 8. You're representing Catholics for the common good and Catholicism is something along with any other theology that you want to keep out of the public policy debate. I understand that and respect it. But the fact of the matter is that in many people's minds, it can't be separated because of who's supporting this and because of the money behind it.
Well, I understand that. And, people raise that to try to tap into anti-religious bigotry. And that's just a fact. There's nothing religious about the arguments on this and the consequences. As far as me being a Catholic, the Catholic Church is the institution that has been promoting and advocating human rights, longer than any other institution in the history of the world. In fact, the Christian understanding of the person has provided the foundation for human rights and has changed the entire world in that regard. So faith, informing reason is there's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing. However, public policy debates should be argued on the basis of reason, on the basis of public interest, and that's exactly what we're doing. One other point that I'll make is that it is a fact now that this is being imposed on us. In fact, it is another indication of the arrogance of the four judges on the California Supreme Court that they declined to stay the implementation of their ruling until after the people had voted on it. So it's the California Supreme Court, these four activist judges who are shoving this down the throat of the voters, that are creating the kind of confusion that we're having right now on what happens if Proposition 8 passes.
Remember, I wanted Ms. Kendall to have the final say here because we started with you, Bill May. So, Kate Kendall, some final words here from you?
Given that I am a lawyer and we were involved in this case, just to protect the court a little bit, I mean, courts have a very important role to play, and they are the final arbiter and the protector of individual rights and liberties. These were not four activist judges. These were Republican-appointed judges, and as the majority of the court is, Ron George, a Republican, the Chief Justice, who authored the opinion. So it's really important to this is not a partisan issue. This is an issue of what kind of California do we want to live in, and how do we best want to protect couples and relationships and families and communities, and to expand the right of all couples to be able to marry. We've now had dozens and dozens of editorials in papers that you would not expect, the Ventura Times, the San Diego Union Tribune, California Teachers Association, the League of Women Voters, all saying La Opinion, all editorializing how devastating it would be if Prop 8 were to pass for communities, for families, for relationships, and just for fundamental values, regardless of how someone feels about same-sex marriage. Eliminating the right of couples to marry is not the direction we should be heading, and people should vote no.
Well, that's going to be the final word, and now it's up to you, the voters. Proposition 8 will be on the California November 8th ballot. I want to extend thanks to Kate Kendall, Executive Director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights and a member of the Executive Committee of the No on 8 campaign. Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you, Bill May, Chairman of Catholics for the Common Good.
It's good to be with you. Thank you.
Proponent of Proposition 8. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. We are appreciative of your listenership and appreciative of those of you who called in this hour. We've got another hour ahead. We're going to talk all about two plays by August Wilson, the Pulitzer Prize-winning great African-American playwright who are being featured. Two of his plays are being featured here in the Bay Area. Remind you, you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or calling 415-553-3300. Thanks to Senior Editor Dan Zoll, to producers Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.